One of my favorite things in launching these partnerships is getting KPI alignment. And that means that when I'm on a call with a partner, it's not just about, hey, let me pitch you why a startup partnership is a good idea. I want to know, what are your KPIs and goals? Because if I can help you reach them through this partnership, then I become valuable to you.
Welcome to SaaS Connect, the SaaS Partnership Podcast, brought to you by the Cloud Software Association. Thank you, as always, to our podcast producers, Content Allies. They help B2B companies like you launch revenue-generating podcasts. They'll schedule interviews, produce the podcast, and promote it. Check them out at contentallies.com.
All right. Hi, everyone. So forewarning, I used to be a public school teacher, so I'm going to do some cold calling. It's going to be interactive. I'm going to ask for some dancing. Just wanted to freak you out. Make sure you're awake. I'm not going to do any of that. It's okay. Now I got you listening, though. I'm the senior head of startup partnerships at HubSpot. I was a startup founder before I went over to HubSpot. I was actually using HubSpot to scale my business. Once I had sold my company and was approached by HubSpot for startups, I thought that was a great opportunity to continue in the world of startups and do that with a company that I know is beneficial for my community. So that's a little bit of what brought me here. And I run our team over the Americas. So we have over 5,000 startup partnerships under us, 20,000 plus startups. So we are busy. This is a little bit about our agenda. We're going to talk about, if you're not familiar, what is a startup partner program? Why would you actually launch one? How do you know if you should launch one? And then tips for how to actually go about that. And then how to measure your success. That's important. That's part of our storytelling. Then we'll wrap it up with some key learnings. So what is a startup partnership? So what a startup partnership program is, it's when a SaaS company or service provider provides an exclusive discount to startups through channel partners. Those channel partners for us are venture capital, accelerators, incubators, and we also provide education and resources. We'll go into what that program looks like in a couple of slides. But like any great partnership, it's meant to be a win-win. For our startups, they are able to scale with a mature tech stack at a price that they can afford. For our partners, these are discounts that startups can't just get when they come to us directly. So it enables them to provide an exclusive discount to provide value to these founders. And if I'm a venture capitalist, if my startup scales faster and then I have a liquidity event earlier, that's also a benefit for me. And as a SaaS company, we have a continuous stream of ecosystem qualified leads. Obviously, that's wonderful. This is also one of the fastest growing sectors of partnerships. So something that you should be on the lookout for. These are six reasons. There's more reasons. But some of the reasons why you should form a startup partnership are, one, we're all here as partnership professionals. We know that partnerships will enable you to scale faster than just doing this one-on-one. This enables you to have exponential growth into the ecosystem. What I will also say about selling to startups is that startups are easier to access than, think about that really complex enterprise level, long sales process. Startups, there's a lot fewer barriers. They have urgent needs that they're ready to convert, and they're also more willing to try innovative tech and to try new things. So that's some of the reasons to focus on that market. You can also increase your product loyalty by getting in early and growing with them. It is much easier to be at the base level investing in these startups and having them scale with you than trying to convince them 5-10 years down the line to move off of their legacy product. And hopefully they have a bit of loyalty to you because you helped them early on to scale. You can also increase your brand awareness by highlighting top buzzy startups. So for example, OpenAI, the company behind ChatGPT, guess who they're scaling on? HubSpot. They are the fastest growing app in history with 100 million users as of January. They are coming through our program. See how nice that sounds? You can do that with your company. Be able to share those buzzy brands. It also will help you with improving some brand recognition and reputation. So if you're investing in the startup ecosystem, that builds goodwill with your customers, with your partners. Helps you break into new markets. When you're looking at startups as a market, this spans multiple geographies. It spans multiple verticals. This is a way for you to be able to get broad-based penetration. And then lastly, you have the potential for strategic investments and acquisition. When you are working with startups, you are able to see what are the newest ideas, who are the innovators, who are companies that we might want to invest in and acquire as we grow. Okay, so we're going to talk a little bit next about the HubSpot for Startups program, because we're going to be referencing this throughout. So I want you to know the program that we work with and how that's architected. So depending on the partnership, so we have venture capital, accelerator, incubator partners. We also have co-working partnerships and membership orgs. So they have different levels of discounting based on their different levels of qualifying. So a venture capital investment, I'm going to trust if Sequoia is going to put their money behind somebody, you've done good due diligence, I'm going to give those startups up to 90% off. If it's a co-working space like WeWork, less qualification, they start at 30% off. But we deliver discounts starting at 90% for year one for a seed company, 50% year two, 25% off ongoing. I'm going to talk to you about the theory behind that pricing structure in a bit. And then we also offer education and resources and tailored training. This part is important because it's not just about the transactional discount that's going to get them in the door. It's also about how am I going to invest in supporting you and do that through an inbound motion where we are giving first. We have over 1,200 integrations as part of that package, and they're able to access our full growth suite. I'm assuming you might know who HubSpot is, but also contextual, should add on. If you don't know, we are free CRM. We have a sales hub, marketing hub, service hub, ops hub, CMS hub, basically your whole back office with 1,200 integrations. So it's your one place to go to run your business. So think about the core parts of, let's say, Salesforce, Marketo, Calendly, Zendesk, Hootsuite, MailChimp. Roll those together, add a few. That's what we do. Okay. Now, how do you know if you should actually launch a startup program? It's not for everybody, and it's not for everybody at every stage. One of the things that I would be looking at is, are startups one of your core user groups? For HubSpot, we realized that early on in our startup journey, we saw that a lot of startups were demoing with us and they weren't converting. And it was because there was a price cliff that they couldn't get over. We thought, what if we give a greater discount to them when they are that early stages as an upfront investment, and then they can grow and scale with us with a descending discount? Because when you're thinking about startups, what's different between them and like small businesses are the way and the velocity that they're going to scale. I might invest in you today. Maybe you can't afford me today, but if you get your Series A funding next year, you certainly can. So we decided to double down on that market. If startups are one of your core user groups, here's a couple of questions that I would be asking yourself to think about if this is a good fit. First of all, can startups get onto your product easily and get a return on investment quickly? They're not going to have a dedicated person to work on the implementation of this product. They need to be able to move fast, and you need to be able to make it happen. I would also be looking at, what's the churn rate for the startups that are part of your network? Are they dropping off? Is that the reason that they're dropping off? Is that something that you can architect better around? So you want to be thinking about that. You want to see if they are loyal. You want to be managing all of their data. And then the second thing that I'd be thinking about is, if your product supports key moments in a startup's evolution. There are these make or break moments as a startup, whether it is finding your product market fit, whether it is being able to test new markets, maybe it is converting users from free to paid. What is the specific moment that you can help startups in? For example, with HubSpot, I told you we do a million things. We could be applicable at many levels, but that key point when startups really use us is when they're trying to scale through automation. The last thing that I would say would help you to know if your product is a good fit is if you use a product-led growth strategy versus a sales-led growth strategy. This is generally starting with a freemium model and helping your clients and your customers to grow into it. Startups are going to be more interested if there's a low barrier to entry and they can start seeing returns right away. That's a little bit about why you should think about starting a startup program, what makes it a good fit. And I'm going to talk to you about some tips for launching a startup program, what we did really well and what we did really bad that we learned from. Okay, so our first tip is to bring on internal stakeholders early and often as you launch your program. As we know, as partnership professionals, you're going to be working cross-functionally, and you want that group to be bought in very early on. When we started within HubSpot, we were a small but nimble team. It felt like a startup within a larger organization. That was great. But then when you don't have the dedicated resources to be able to scale, you need to work with other departments to get those dedicated resources. And if you bring them in early on, you get them invested in your growth, they understand the value to their programs, then they are going to be more willing to work with you and also to remove friction later on down the line. When you think about marketing, they want high volume of qualified leads. How can you be an early funnel for that? If it's sales, they want deal volume and they want high revenue. How can you help contribute to that deal volume? I would also say there's generally like a planning season that you have at work. You want to be meeting with these internal stakeholders, mapping out who the stakeholders are that you want to work with and getting in early in that planning cycle. You want to be talking to them and seeing what is their KPIs and how can you align to it. If marketing has a theme, they have something that they're focusing on, say, great, I can help reach that theme with this partner network. Here's the month that we could do it in. You don't want to be the person in Q3 that's coming in and being like, hey, can you fit me in as a favor to this one thing? It's possible, but it's not your best approach. This really segues into talking about how you remove internal friction later on down the pipeline. So when building trust with sales is essential, our team, our business development team is a sales overlay model. We aren't sellers. I recommend that if you run a partner program because I want to remove that transactional relationship from a partnership building relationship. When we look at sales, they want high deal volume and they want high commission checks. When I took on this program, one of the first things that I did is I sat down with all the leaders of sales and I asked for their feedback. It's great to bring them in early on, but you need to be getting feedback along the way. It's the breakfast of champions. It also meant that some of that breakfast of champions was me eating humble pie as I talked to them and they're like, some people are like, I love the startups program. I've had great success on it. I have been able to sell all of this. And then there's other people that are like, it cuts into my margins. And I actively steer people away from you. Tell me why I shouldn't. Like, okay, all right, I'll take the honest feedback. But what we did with that is that we were able to remove some friction and re-architect the way that we were presenting to sales. So one of the things we did is, yes, it's 90% off. That cuts into your commission check. But when they renew in year two, you get all of that commission back on. So for my senior sales leaders, for the people that have been around a little bit, they are going to sell a smaller deal and then they're going to have that commission just rolling in year after year. That made it a win for them. Also, revenue isn't the only thing that matters to sales. It is, but there's different ways that you can get to that. They were telling me, I don't want these small deals. And I said, that's fine. Do you know that on average, these deals close 4 times faster than your other deals because they've already been qualified, they have been nurtured? Yes, it's half the cost, but if you can close 4 deals in the same time that it takes you to close one, then I've just doubled your commission check. You want to be thinking about those things. Also, if you're selling this internally, you want to make sure that you can automate as much of this process as possible. Can they sell touchlessly? Can you automate onboarding? We're going to talk a little bit more about that as we go, but it's going to be a much harder sell if you're going to say, I want to deliver this huge discount. Also, I want them to have a customer service rep. I want them to have a full sales cycle. I want them to have a full onboarding. That ROI is going to make less and less sense. Another reason why you have to work a lot with your internal champions. That leads to talking about how do you create value and eliminate roadblocks throughout the full startup customer life cycle. When we started the program, we had startups coming on. We know that they need onboarding. If you don't have onboarding, you're not going to see value. You're not going to be a happy customer. And the onboarding was pretty expensive as compared to the price that they were actually paying for the product. And that was leading to some friction, which meant that they were later on churning off the product. Thinking about our long-term math, we actually don't get a return on investment until year 3 because of the decelerated discounting structure. So if our startups churn before they hit year 3, it's actually a net loss for the business. So we had to go and fix that. We created a low touch, more automated onboarding that they could do. They could also pay for the more in-depth onboarding, but this removed friction there. Then if you think about through the sales cycle, you need to be able to educate your internal stakeholders on the value of your program. But then we got into renewals. And renewals through HubSpot, you get automated scoring, all this type of stuff. Great. But what was happening is that renewals was being told, focus on these high value deals, our enterprise level customers. That's where you want to invest. We realized that the startups were falling through the cracks here because renewals couldn't identify the fact that these are your fastest growing, high potential for upsell, cross-sell opportunities, startups. And they are the most likely to be able to upsell in that next year if you can hit them at that point that they need you most. So it's not just about starting the program. It's about figuring out how to optimize throughout the whole cycle as you go along. One of the biggest mistakes that I see people make when they launch startup programs is giving these like 10, 15% discounts that you know that you could get just off of the website. It doesn't feel exclusive. It feels transactional. And then it lives just as a discount. I guarantee you, if you start that way, it will languish on some sort of Google Docs, Airtable, something that nobody will look at because they're not going to see any value in it because it doesn't feel exclusive. Don't do that. When you think about it, like, would you rather be a coupon or a consultant? A consultant is much more valuable. That's why with the HubSpot for Startups program, we are delivering education and value. Whether or not you are a customer of HubSpot at that moment, we can look at founders and say, okay, a lot of these founders, highly technical people, maybe don't have a formal background in sales or marketing or SEO. We take our industry expertise and then we'll deliver sessions on not just like, how do you get started on HubSpot? That's great. We have content for that. But more, where do you start with an SEO strategy as a founder? What is applicable advice to that? And you go in as that early helper. So that way they will start with you on the free and then they'll grow with you into the paid. You also want to personalize your messaging for every community and lead with data. A lot of people ask me, we have 5,000 partners. Do you know how hard it is to get near 5,000 VCs to want to work with you? Not easy. So we spent a lot of time thinking about how do we enhance that value proposition? How do you get their interest? And how do you get them in the door? Because for a lot of the people that you're working with in a startup program, they might not necessarily have a person that this is their job to manage these partnerships. So we're going to talk a little bit later about community marketplaces that are going to help you to do that if they don't have a person that is dedicated. However, when you're going into these communities, here's some things that I would do. If I'm talking to a VC, I am thinking how many of their current portfolio are using HubSpot. And if I can go in and say a third of your portfolio companies are already using HubSpot, on average, they could get a 20K discount, which would enable them to scale faster with lower overhead, but they're missing out on that because you're not a partner. Or I can go in and I can say, look, we have helped 15 of your founders save 20K. Do the math on that. You can go in and say, we've saved you over 600,000 in software for your founders, and we provided this education and upskilling. You can also go in and say, look, we are to use two of our wonderful partners and pit them against each other. We could say for Sequoia, we have delivered over $1 million in discounts. Andreessen, we've only delivered 600K. There's a gap here. We've had several of your founders apply and pay full price. That's so unnecessary. Let's talk about how we can go deeper. One thing that I would say is really important is to have a founder first mentality and being willing to give first. Founders are your core group of constituents between these two. If your founders are happy, your partners are happy. So make sure that is the key point of what you're doing and be ready to give first. Be ready to provide benefit because eventually if you're in these partnerships where you are figuring out how do I be beneficial again and again, they're going to start coming back to you and say, what could I do for you? How can we do more? Bring their startup stories to you. Say, oh, I just met with this startup. We did office hours. This is something that came up for them that was high value and make it personal. Also, you want to be thinking about how you can create value beyond just the discount. When we have partners that come to us, maybe it's a new POC, maybe it's a new partner, think about what are the things that they're trying to solve for. When we have a new POC, we can talk to them and say, look, we have over 5,000 partners. I can tell you what works well in managing these partnerships. I can tell you what doesn't go so well. I can talk to you about how they roll it out. Maybe that partner is looking to expand their brand. Can you bring them in as a judge on a pitch competition? Could you do a webinar together? Maybe it is helping their startups to be able to highlight themselves as part of a case study, or we just launched a docuseries, Spiraling Up, in conjunction with LinkedIn. We have so many of our top founders and startups that are featured in that documentary, and that's a value to your VC connections. So you want to think about what are the multiple ways that you can align with them beyond just that transactional piece. This is where the partnerships really get going. You want to make sure that you tailor your messaging to startups. Ideally, when you're thinking about if you're going through this process and you're saying, okay, I have a lot of startups that are part of my network. I want to be able to deliver value. You also want to make sure that these startups don't have really bespoke needs and need high levels of customization because that's not going to really work for you. It's not going to generate the ROI that you want. you shouldn't need to tailor your messaging that much, but you do need to go through your onboarding, your sales process, your renewals, and make sure that the messaging that you're using is actually going to speak to startups. Because regardless, as a customer, you want to feel special. You want to feel unique. You want to feel seen and heard. And it just requires tweaking some templates to do that. You also want to focus on what makes a good partner and what they value. We at first focused a lot on volume, quantity over quality. We brought in so many partners. And same with your customers. There's going to be that Pareto's principle, that 80-20 rule of 20% are going to be really productive partners and 80% are going to be not the best use of your time. Where you would start is going into that 20% and saying, how can I provide deeper value and resources and ingrain you even further in this ecosystem? That might mean that I'm talking to those partners about how can you build an integration with HubSpot? Can I connect you to the ventures team? I had a partner that was working to build out their diversity inclusion programming. How could I source some people from our DI&B department within HubSpot to be able to be speakers for that? You want to think about what are all the tools that you have and how can you go deeper? Double down on that 20% and then focus back on that 80% and figure out how you can make them productive. What we did is we said, at first, my team, we were incentivizing people to bring on as many partners as possible. And then we said, okay, we're going to focus on partner activation. If they don't generate at least 3 leads within the first 3 months, we know that they're not going to be a good fit partner. So it's not just about who you bring on, but are they actually going to make returns? And then we started thinking about if we could bring them on as customers, they can see the value themselves. And then that way they can communicate that to the startups. Thinking about all the ways that you can go deeper to evangelize that group of that 80% and then be willing to make some cuts where you need to. There was partnership types that we experimented with. And later on, we said, not the best use of our time. We're going to cut those partnerships. You need to be able to innovate and to adapt. These are some of the things that I think about whether a partner is a good fit. First of all, to be discerning. 90% of startups fail within the first 5 years. I want to make sure that you are a discerning partner because I want to be, when we're giving a discount, it's an upfront investment. I want to make sure that we are investing in the right startups that you would invest into. We like partners that value education, that put founders first, because that means they're going to value what we bring to the table outside of that initial discount. We also want them to take a call. Partners will call and they'll be like, look, I just want you to like sign us on, send us a discount. I don't want to do anything. And for some partner programs, that's okay. For us, we want an actual partnership. And so you need to be willing to take the call and to be able to give it some time. You need to be willing to actually promote us. We don't want to be a passive discount. We want you to actually tell me how you're going to share this with your ecosystem. And part of that is getting an idea of a commitment to a certain number of applications. If you aren't generating any applications to us, that means you haven't shared out the information. It's either not a good fit for your community and it's wasting time and resources. So let's just save ourselves up front and not do any of that unless you're willing to know what makes a good partnership on both sides. One of my favorite things in launching these partnerships is getting KPI alignment. And that means that when I'm on a call with a partner, it's not just about, hey, let me pitch you why a startup partnership is a good idea. I want to know what are your KPIs and goals? Because if I can help you reach them through this partnership, then I become valuable to you. Otherwise, I just become optional to you. And for some of my partners, I can think of one that they said, look, it's all about sponsorship dollars. It's all about being able to bring in those dollars. I said, okay, I get that. You have a goal that you need to reach. At that time, I had absolutely no budget for sponsorship dollars, still wasn't giving up. And I asked them, do in-kind sponsorships count towards your overall number? They're like, I don't know, let's see. So they went back and they said, actually, in-kind would count. And then I got them onto HubSpot. And I was able to give them $20,000 in credits towards that sponsorship amount. And then we did a $5,000 sponsorship commitment. That was our first sponsorship, just so that way they had some actual dollars coming in. We have grown that partnership exponentially. That was with GAN, the Global Accelerator Network, now rebranded as Morrow. We have grown that partnership exponentially over the last few years because we aligned on, he knew that I needed to see qualified applications. I knew that he needed to see sponsorship dollars, and we figured out a way to meet in the middle. It's not just enough to bring on these great partners. You also have to keep them engaged, whether it is your newsletters, whether it is creating fresh content. Make sure that you're still staying top of mind and you're providing value for their founders. make sure that you help your partners understand which founders should use your solution and when. So founders, when these partners come in, they don't expect them to prioritize you in the same way that you're prioritizing them. Don't make them go through all of your content to figure out what's applicable. Make it easy, make it templatized. And when I talk to them, I try and tell them, yes, HubSpot could be applicable at any level. However, use the free till the wheels fall off. Then start with sales. That's usually where people start first. You can quickly pick up the phone. You can already be going. Then I would move into marketing sooner than you know you need it, because you need to be able to build up that foundation to be able to accelerate your growth. Think about where you can talk to them about your unique value proposition, and you're going to gain authenticity and trust by being able to say it's not right for some startups at some stages. Another tip that I would have is to leverage your community-based marketplaces. You don't have to do this on your own. When you are trying to experiment, you're trying to grow this out, there are partners out there. We have Built First in the room. They are also have a table outside. They're not paying me to say this. They're just great partners of ours. But you are able to work with partners like them to spin up an app marketplace with all of these associated offers to be able to get deep market penetration a lot quicker. This is how you get quick wins when you're experimenting with a new program. Lastly, track your data. The best thing that you can do is be linked to a revenue goal, because that's how you show your value. I don't care what anybody else says. If you don't hold a revenue goal in a SaaS company, you are a second-class citizen and you will be on the chopping block at some point. Don't be optional, be necessary. We started with activity-based metrics. How many newsletter signups did we have? How many webinar attendees? Things like that, because we didn't yet have that level of attribution. Then we moved into influence QLs. So how many of our leads were coming through the partnership program? Eventually, we also took on revenue attribution. So how many of those leads are resulting in deals? And then we could put a dollar value on what we are bringing in to the business. Which one of these activity metrics are most important will also depend on what department you're living under. If it's sales, marketing, partnerships is its own department, or if you're your own department. Key takeaways, building your internal stakeholders, making sure that alignment, growing with that as you go. You want to be thinking about that whole customer life cycle for that startup founder. You want to make sure that those discounts are sizable, that they're scalable, that it's not just a cliff after year one, that you give them a reason to renew with you. Put your founders first, put your partners first. Find where you can have those win-wins and make sure that you're ready to communicate value outside of the obvious. Leverage your community-based marketplaces and make sure that you're building that internal and external alignment. I hope that was helpful, and I am open for questions. And this is how you contact me in the program.
Thank you, Kelsey. Any questions for Kelsey?
Thank you, Kelsey. That was super informative. I think when you're trying to think about, I'm going back to your prioritization list, which is useful, but how do you end up in a lopsided value proposition, or maybe you're providing a lot of value and the partner isn't? And how do you prevent that or correct that? Or is that just part of the game and you're going to have a number of those that you just have to deal with? How do you think about that problem?
Good question. I think first it's figuring out the prototype that's really working, the partnership model that's working, and see where you can duplicate that, see who fits into that and who fits outside of that. And then I think you can refine your value proposition as you go. You're always going to have some lopsided partnerships. Part of it is getting to a point where you know and can communicate your value and you can quantify the value that you've given to them. And I will go on to calls and say, look, we've provided X and X value. We haven't seen this back from you. And we need to see this, or we are not going to include you in the program anymore. And that means that some partners we've lost, and that's just part of the cost of doing business. But some of them have also come back. They have a new POC and they're like, why aren't we a part of this? And we're like, didn't work in the past. Let's talk about how we're going to do it differently.
One great thing about this program versus the other things that we've been talking about is that this program is much more an aggregation. You show results, right? So you're thinking about, if you had said 5,000 partners, mm-hmm. is that right? So 5,000 different VCs, you define VCs because I'm sure underneath the startup community is probably much larger, right? So if you think about what you're going to be doing from building a partnership program, I think every speaker talked about like what you're trying to accomplish as a company, what you're trying to goal from a goals perspective, and then segmenting that by the different types of partners and communities you go after, right? So Kelsey did an amazing job talking about startups, which is one segment, the types of partners you could go after. And one thing about this that's really important is the aggregation of all these partners versus strategic partners, which may be a few partners you're going to go deep with. This program is much more about how can I go broader with a large community and then abstract from them what I need from a returns perspective and defining that, which Kelsey did an awesome job talking about how she did that for this segment. So awesome to see all the different types of programs.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kelsey.
If you like this and want more great insights on software partnerships, you've got to rate, like, and subscribe and join us at thecloudsoftwareassociation.com. Thank you as always to our podcast producers, Content Allies. They help B2B companies like you launch revenue-generating podcasts. They'll schedule interviews, produce the podcast, and promote it. Check them out at contentallies.com. We'll see you on the next episode.